You're on the air.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yes, welcome.
I'm the retired director of civil aviation that would have called you on other matters. And I want to speak to you today specifically as it relates to the biometrics and passports.
We'll give your name again.
I'm Mitchie Beckles.
Mitchie Beckles.
Right. Now, I heard some of your callers complaining about biometrics and the why they should have an antennae and so on in the new chip on the passport. But before we could understand that, we have to understand where it all came from. And it has to do with the International Civil Aviation Organization that is the aviation branch of the United Nations. Now, in 1944, a number of countries signed the International Civil Aviation Convention in Chicago, and that was on the 7th of December, 1944. And this arm, the International Civil Aviation, was born out of that and came into being in 1947. Now, what has happened is that that convention contains some 96 articles which contain the standards and recommended practices to regulate world aviation. Each country, and there are some over 200 member states to the International Civil Aviation Organization, each country must incorporate the standards into local law. Our standards as it relates to passports is contained in Annex 9 to that convention called Facilitation. Barbados does not determine what goes into a passport or what a passport should look like, since this is internationally done. In other words, the world determines what the passport must look like and what it contains. In this regard, and at the 30th session, we, at that session, agreed on the contents of the passport, where we had the machine-readable passports, and now we've upgraded to the microchip in the passport, and these will carry an antenna.
Why was it necessary to have these features?
It was necessary because the world is moving towards greater security and quite a bit of information that can easily move around through technology. That is what we are doing. And it is difficult. I believe that you would have heard about a number of passports that were either fraudulently achieved or people copying passports and so on. So it prevents people from being able to do this type of business.
And in a world of growing concern about terrorism and all of that.
Terrorism and so on, you know, that we're talking security. So it's a security matter.
Yeah.
Now,
The particular treaty that you're talking about, was that treaty taken to Parliament here?
Not the contents, the standards, each standard, these are amended every day. These standards are contained in 19 annexes to the convention. And every year they are reviewed and updated and agreed upon. And these standards, if they are not done by the General Assembly, which is the world, then they are done by the Council of the ICAO, which is basically the governing body. And they will pass these to the states. And the states must upgrade their regulations and their aviation legislation and so on, so as to have these implemented. Because they would have no teeth. It's international law, but they would really have no teeth if they are not incorporated into local law. So the biometrics and so on that you're hearing so much about from the chief immigration officer, these are standards that have been agreed upon by the International Civil Aviation Organization and has been sent to their states for implementation. It must be incorporated into local law. And Barbados is a signatory to the convention. Let me hasten to tell you, however, that if there is a standard and a country does not conform to the standard, that they must immediately file a difference with the International Civil Aviation Organization, and they must also indicate to the International Civil Aviation Organization what they are putting in place to work instead of implementing the standard. So we cannot just say they've decided you have a chip and so on, so we are not doing that. We have to do it. And I want to stress that it has absolutely nothing to do with the FBI or the United States, because the United States got to do the same thing that we are doing. These are international passports. This is what it is. This is done by the International Civil Aviation Organization. So I think that your caller was very incorrect and misled when he said that that information is for the FBI and the United States. It has nothing to do with them, because they got to do the same thing. And the other part I want to make it clear is that the machine-readable passport would run along with the new microchip passport, and then the International Civil Aviation Organization announces a date that the machine-readable passport will be phased out. So if you don't have a microchip passport, then your passport that is machine-readable will be no good. So we have to be with the world if we intend to progress. I thought that I would bring that to you, since I saw that some of your persons were asking certain questions. I think that you would have remembered the amount of discussion they had on fingerprinting. I want to make it clear that Barbados does not come up with these things. These things are come up by the International Civil Aviation Organization, which is the body of the United Nations to regulate world aviation. Thanks for hearing me,
sir. I want to thank you very much for coming on the air and sharing that information. That's the kind of intervention that we welcome, and I'm highly appreciative of your contribution in this regard. This person sends me a message here. I told them that ideally I would have loved to have had them on the air, but they say no, they're not interested in going on air. He says, good afternoon. Over the years, several companies have downsized and displaced workers, being offered severance packages and contract work and retraining options. I am one who benefited from a retrenchment exercise and can reassure anyone facing a similar situation that it is not gloom and doom, as some will want you to think. Lump sums, if used wisely, can be a blessing. That's a gentleman who sent that to us. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good afternoon, David.
Hi, good afternoon.
Well, I've been off the air since 2016 November, when we were celebrating our 50th year of independence. But hearing some of this emotionally charged atmosphere here today, it brought me out of my hiatus. I had to come on the radio just to make some comments and to appreciate what you have linked to the program, because you were trying to assure people and to let people understand that this government needs a chance. I'm not saying it in that way openly, but really and truly, a lot of the callers that you're here speaking, one can understand they're scared, people are frightened, they hear people going home and so on. So the atmosphere is very, very, very tense. But a question that we have not really answered as yet, you know, we had an election, we voted out the DLP, gave the BLP all the 30 seats, etc. And the question that was being asked by former Prime Minister Erskine Sandford, how we got back here, that has not truly been answered, you know. And we keep going over it. People understand that we're going through hardship, but they don't understand how we got back here. But I can point to a few things that led us back here. We had something called public sector reform. But to me, that whole thing was shenanigans, because really it's very cosmetic. This is where we have people in the public sector. I am saying to you that the permanent secretaries never, ever took charge of that program to give the sector the reform that it needed. Yes, these people are very well qualified, mind you, but to my mind, they are poor managers of people. They may be able to manage procedures and systems, but when it comes to creating the work ethic that is needed in Barbados, we sadly are lacking in that area. And I say that without apology. But you have our current Prime Minister talking about digitization and so on. And it seems that somehow it was lost upon our managers of the public sector. And I'm speaking strictly about permanent secretaries and so on. They ought to have been aware of the technology that was needed and for us to get rid of this paper and communication, email and so on. You know, the volume of paper that she talks about. Yeah, I heard her mention it yesterday. These are things that you shouldn't wait for any government or policy to come down and say, we need to find ways to manage.
But in all fairness to them, they might have recommended it, but then it needed to have approval because you need money and to do these things.
Yeah, agreed. And again, too much bureaucracy for things that can be very transparent and very, very clear.
And sometimes you need that buy-in from the very top because there are so many people who are afraid of change. They're resistant to the idea.
Correct, correct. Because from as early as the 1990s, we had embarked on a program called EduTech. But, you know, they were quite still hesitant and fearful society. We never really understood globalization and the need to be competitive in terms of technology and so on, and changing world markets and so on. I want to cast your mind back to 2007 and that election going into 2008, January 15. The Prime Minister at the time was Owen Seymour Alpha, and he had said that we were going into a period of turbulence. I remember him saying that.
Yes, he did.
Even in the election. And obviously, the opposing side would have used it and saying that he was just generating fear and so on. And quick so, in a few months, we saw the whole world economy crashing. But the thing that has me is that Barbados had never really recovered from that recession at all. People all around us were recovering, and we keep hearing about medium-term fiscal strategy and all kinds of things. And we had a government who believed that they were so popular that any advice given to them was not necessary. They felt that the downgrades and so on were not important. They are doing the things in their own style, in their own way. I remember all those things that they said. And we have seen the consequences of such thinking. We are bearing it here today. We saw a situation where the citizens were assured that Clico, and I'm not trying to make this political, but I want to talk about trust. You heard, if you hear your Prime Minister coming and saying Clico is sound, it gives you a freedom in your mind that you can invest, you can take a risk. I heard Larry call earlier today, and she talked about Mr. Maskell talking about risk and so on, people knowing it was a risk. But yes, investing on any scale is a risk. But one did not expect the behavior of the people who are government, who are encouraging us to buy bonds and so on. The economy is on the way back up. Every time you hear that just around the corner, this was going to be this and this is going to be that. And then you had the technocrats in the central bank at the time, sort of like partnering with the government and giving this belief that everything was going to be good, everything was going to be okay. We are seeing is all seeing what has rolled out. We are hearing today, whatever. But what separates the current government from what has gone before is the openness with which they are engaging the society and how they're speaking to us. And we can. And what's happened is that you have an atmosphere where people can exchange. So you're getting a lot of volatility in the air and so on. People no longer can speak openly, whereas before you had a feeling of repression. You felt that you were going to be victimized, etc. We took care of that as an electorate. Now let us move on as a people. Let us heal. Let us give the measures a chance. Where they're not working, you can always tweak them and bring them around to and fashion them to suit what is needed. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks, hello? You're on the air. 4341790. Hello? You're on the air.
Hello, good afternoon, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, good. Oh, yes. I want to deal with this whole question about the comment about, I think it's kind of, I'm amazed that people that should know better would make comments about government securities being a risk. I just want to quote you something here from one of my investment texts that I used when I was studying investment. Let me give you an example. You know, British government securities are known as gilts, right?
Yes.
No, here. I want just a little quote. Gilts are quoted on the stock exchange and are the safest form of quoted investment because the government will never, listen to this very carefully, the government will never default on interest or capital repayment. Good. I want to name anything more. Government, the attraction of government securities is that they are safe. That's why they attract pension funds. In fact, I think the people who manage government debt should recognize that government debt is not just an ordinary debt. It involves pension funds, people life policies, banks investing in it, so many things. So that is why you see that the British government will never, ever allow what happened in Barbados to happen in Britain. It never happened that. Since all the years I've been following the securities market in Britain, I've never heard that they ever cut interest rate on any, because it would be a disaster for them. Because many of their large insurance companies, thousands and thousands of pension funds invest in. And in fact, there are two pillars, as you know, of the capital market. Gilts and blue chip equities. Those are the two. And every single investment is directly or indirectly linked to two of those. Check it out and see. The unit trust, investment trust, managed bond, a host of products are linked to gilts. So they cannot allow the gilt market to ever reach the stage that Barbados put people.
But let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Other countries have followed a similar path, though.
Yeah, but other countries that are badly managed. Jamaica. You think Jamaica is any good example for anybody?
Well,
Jamaica
had it. Badly managed. Had it. Fair enough.
All the badly managed countries. You mean like Greece, for example, another badly managed country.
So as secure, as safe as they are, there are countries that have touched them.
Yeah, but the ones that, all the countries that I know where this has happened into Barbados, now we're badly managed. And I don't know if any.
Would you say that Barbados has been?
What is going to cause a country to reach the stage where you have to cut interest on government securities? It would have to be the managed government. That would have to be very terribly managed.
So the investment is only as safe as the country's economy has been managed.
As it is managed. So what I'm telling you is that the British government will never allow it to happen, because they know how important the gilt market is to their economy and to the capital market in Britain. Take Britain as an example. In fact, they have developed every kind of investment, every kind of financial asset that you can know of. And all of them, check out every financial asset and you will see they are all linked to either the gilt market or equities, that is shares and so on. The gilt market is the biggest on the stock exchange. In fact, there are many products that, for example, I think there's a product that we call the managed bond, for example. It has cash, gilts, and equities. But very often, more often than not, they say the managed bond will have more of it into gilts, because gilts are always available. So they don't see it as anything that is that risky. It is people, the pension funds and all those things invest in gilts because it is safe. You don't want pension funds to be risky when they go home. So the guys who manage Barbados, as I was telling from me last night, the people who manage Barbados national debt, they obviously didn't understand or they didn't realize that this is weak pension funds. I'm sure many pension funds have called it not to invest in. First of all, the next thing Barbados, there's no equities market. The only thing in Barbados is the government securities, the only thing. And to then for it to reach this stage, it's a very sad day indeed.
I understand that.
To me, it is very sad indeed. I mean, and it should not be minimized. The seriousness of it should not be minimized.
The question that you would have to answer is, in the circumstances, did you see any other option facing us?
You mean in the circumstances right now?
Yes.
I'm not attacking what they're doing. No. I'm talking, all of this had to do with how the national debt was managed. For example, the massive amount of borrowing for national insurance and having to pay. Look at the amount of interest. If you talk about 11 to 15 billion on paper, I can see why they cut it, because that is the biggest call on government expenditure in any financial year. That's why I could see that to save money, they have to cut it. I could understand that very well. But what I'm saying is, the people from earlier clock, people should know, look, you are dealing with all the banks, the insurance companies, all the institutional investors, they have by law to invest in government securities. So you can't tell people you have to invest in my thing and then you cut it. And you know what? Take a bank, for example. You're getting 6% on what, the ventures or whatever, or the other one, treasury notes or whatever. And now you are down to 1% in this financial year. You know what that means in terms? If you look at a bank financials, I mean, profit and loss and status, you're going to see that there are three sources of income. One, interest income. Two, fee income. And three, one, investment income. Now, their investment income is going to fall significantly as a result of the fall in things. Now, they may have to lay off people. So if you study, you were saying earlier about the layoff, but this is going to have a serious impact across the country.
You can see the knock-on effect that all of this is going to have.
Yes, I can see the multiple effort is going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you know who wrote about it? Well, who? Well, Cook wrote about it a few weeks ago. He was talking about it, and he was right on. This is going to have severe impact on the economy. What this thing is very, very serious indeed. I don't think many people understand the seriousness of it, but it's a very serious thing to happen to any economy. That's how you see it.
How right? do you adjust to it yourself?
Me?
Yes.
Well, I have government paper, but I mean now, I bought savings bonds. So I
you weren't touched because the savings bonds.
I bought savings bonds, right? So I mean, I am not. Well, as I said, I asked you something before, and you always tell me what you're going to do now if your bonds mature. What is the position? But I guess that I know what I will do with them, go straight to central bank. And that's no problem, right? It's not a problem there at all. But I think it's a serious matter because that's the only thing we have in Barbados. And what is going to happen now since they can't borrow for the next 4 years? That's the big issue that we have to address. Where will people invest their money, the pension funds, the life policies that collect money every month, the same national insurance? Where all this money will go?
Given the extent to which public confidence in government paper would have been shot, now, how do you see the government creating an environment where it can restore any of that confidence in these circumstances?
Well, you see, what happened in Barbados, to my mind, people have no other avenue to turn to in the future, even so, because there's nothing to invest in. There's no stock market. I mean, all the major companies are foreign-owned, and I mean, what we call blue chip, what would be classified as blue chip activities, which are called on the stock exchange, we don't have available to
us. So the government could still come back to market and
offer
you at a little bit higher rate?
Whenever this thing is over, after the currency of this IMF program they can't borrow, the government can come back again and they will get money because there's none for people to invest in. What is there to invest in? And I mean, people talk about investing abroad, but I could sit down here. In fact, there's a long talk I would talk to you about. I could give you 1,001 reasons why people don't invest abroad, why the problems involved with it. But people don't seem to look at that. They say, we're going to invest abroad. Like, if they're going to invest in Clico, it's like, if they're going to invest in Clico, they didn't see the problem. So they're going to invest in Clico. Now, the government paper here now is almost as bad as Clico because of how the government debt was managed.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your contribution.
Okay, bye.
Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I find your program to be very depressing because persons who call seem to have forgotten how we got here. When I say how we got here, I don't mean the cause of the debt, but the management that was ignored, the signs that were ignored all along the way. For a number of years, we were getting reports that the Barbados was being downgraded. It was being ignored by those who were in authority, but no one came to explain clearly to the people the consequences of this. Actually, I can remember Mr. Wayne Arthur saying that it meant that government paper was junk. But I don't think anybody took him seriously because he's a politician. However, people are behaving now as though the government had an alternative to the steps which it has taken. But I don't think the government had any alternative. The only other thing was to keep on printing money to meet the demands of the market, but that money was not being backed up by foreign exchange. Indeed, there's a reputable economist in our midst who's not a Barbadian, but who said that our dollar is really worth 9-1 with the U.S. dollar at the present time. So we are in deep trouble, and the government is trying its best to fix a terrible situation. I think that people should be more sympathetic and not try to cause confusion on the airwaves when all the signs point to a dire situation not created entirely by the present government but caused by its predecessor.
What do you say to the average Barbadian when it comes to what they should brace themselves for next?
Well, what is going to come next, as we know, is increase in bus fares. and other increases. What I think we should have is, however, that the social partnership should operate to maintain the lowest possible prices on food. I think if a man can survive, that's the most important thing, that he has something to eat. So I think that they should work hard to ensure that people can buy food. So that's my concern. But I would expect that prices are going to go up in every other area of activity in the country. What it must also require is that people be disciplined, and that is not only the consumer, but those who are selling be disciplined, not try to make or recognize, sorry, that they can't make as much as they would have before, but they ought to restrain themselves to be reasonable in the situation in which we find ourselves. And that's why we have these so-called social partnership, which is supposed to reason out things together before they come to the public. And I hope that there will be great cooperation, and I wish that the government will try its best to ensure that there's cooperation on all sides. But I don't think the government could have done much better than it's doing. I agree with one point, and that is that it has made itself too big a cabinet. I understand the reasoning of the Prime Minister to try to want to get things done as quickly as possible, but I think that that was an oversight, an overambition on her part. I don't think she can do anything immediately about that, but that's the only fault that I think that they made to make the cabinet that size.
Yeah, and I anticipate that the tougher the economic situation is for people, the more scrutiny is going to be on that particular issue.
Yeah.
This person says that over the weekend, the Prime Minister said the debt exchange was a success. But she didn't say that holders of government paper were given an ultimatum. It is either you sign up or she couldn't guarantee that you would get back your money. They just had no choice. And the person went on to say foreign reserves have nothing to do with local loans. I don't think she's referring to anything that you were talking about. Taxes and other levies take care of local business running the government. Foreign reserves are from loans raised on the foreign market. She says, stop praising the private sector. They did little or nothing in terms of investing on the local market to help the country. And it was all because they opposed the last government. And then she concludes here in another post. She says, let your caller know when savings bonds mature in full, they may come under the same conditions as treasury notes, T-bills, etc., if things do not improve. So there are some people who are kind of waiting to see to what extent the measures that are being unveiled right now will correct the situation, and they're kind of skeptical.
Yeah, well, I think that it will be difficult. It's not going to be as short as they think that it will be. I think it's going to take longer to straighten out than they anticipate. But don't forget that in 1991, we had an 8% wages cut. We had to vote on that too. Our wages were cut, and we had to wait for some time to get back. I don't think we got back exactly what we lost, but at least we were given back something. We had to buy bonds through the central bank. All of us didn't agree, but all of us had to take what was given. So the same situation occurs now. And it is a case where the government is in a situation where it can't do better. If it could, it would do better, but I don't think it can do better. Just one thing, though, I would like to comment on,
sure,
which is kind of different, and that is, do you think that there should be some regulatory body which determines whether or not a national asset can be sold off or not? For example, Sol has sold off the majority of its business to a foreign company for $1.2 billion. Do you think that that should be regulated by a national body?
I would prefer to hear your assessment and your opinion. What do you think?
Well, I think it should be, but then at the same time, you can't tell a man what to do with his property. But I think that there should be some kind of moral suasion that you could exercise on businesses. That
if you had a business of that magnitude in the United States selling to a foreign entity, President Trump would have been all over the place about that. You know that?
Yeah, trying to prevent it, but he couldn't stop it, I don't think.
He would use every bit of intimidation that he's got at his disposal on something like that.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, we have a much bigger issue. We don't really appear to have what we would consider to be industries and businesses that we consider to be of strategic national interest.
Well, I think that Saul is so huge that it was a national asset, even though it belonged to a private person. And I believe that there should be some kind of regulation on that. I'm not saying that I'm against the sale, but I am not sure what the impact will be in the long term on Barbados.
Will we were on the verge of selling BNTCL to it too?
And I believe somebody, your other moderator, had said that it was a change in business plan to sell the operation rather than pursue buying BNTCL. But I thought, when I saw this sale come through, that the purpose of buying BNTCL was to also get a bigger price for the thing that you had intended to sell ever since. But nobody would have known that they were going to sell. That would be in their own private domain.
And we were operating on the premise that we were selling to a Barbadian
entity. Exactly. But thank God it didn't come through. And so we still have that asset.
Well, for now.
But the government at the time was agitating that it should have been sold.
Well, that you know what that was all about. That was to get the foreign exchange.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for adding to the contributions today. I must say that the contributions in this last hour or so since we came back from the news have been pretty meaty contributions by some of your callers. Welcome. You're on the air. Hello? One last call. You're on
hello,
the air.
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Hello?
You're on the air.
I am trying to find out if that Mr. Pisa, Mr. Caswell Franklin, and the DLP supporters, if they are vexed and sorry for the urgent and successful effort that my Prime Minister is doing for this country. Because to me, they're like they are vexed and they want to see Barbados go under. That's the only impression I'm getting from those DLP people, including Mr. Pisa and Mr. Caswell Franklin. Because what Mayor Motley is doing for these couple months, nobody should be, whether they are B or D, criticizing her, because this is our country. If there's nowhere else for me to go, a couple of us might be able to leave and settle someplace else. But at the end of the day, this is our home. And those people should put politics out of this thing right now. And let us deal with it as a country. It don't need no politics from Mr. Franklin, Mr. Pisa, no, come in and thank the lady for what she done in these couple of days. And another thing, Dennis Law sent home people the same very sort of saint. They forget that? No? These people, they're not paying for anything at all, even the water meters. Even the water meters aren't paid. What they did with all the money, nothing is paid for. Debt. Every day you look wrong, you open a new debt. Put the politics behind their back and let us get on with what this lady is doing and praise her and thank her and tell her nice words to continue to encourage her. Thank you and have a good
day. You're looking for utopia, though. You're looking for something that won't happen. We live in a country where the politics sees people on one side or the other. As somebody said, always is a system of opposition politics. And therefore, it is to be expected that no matter what the government does, there are going to be people there opposing for the sake of giving an alternative point of view. And we have to live with that. Expect it and understand the context in which it is, you know, the criticism is being given. But you're not going to get a situation where everybody's going to agree with Miss Motley or anybody else who leads Barbados. I understand how passionate you feel about it, but you gotta learn to live with it. It is what it is. That's it for today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Dennis Johnson, thank you very much for supporting me today as you normally do. And a very special thank you to those of you who called this program, including my Ecky Becky friend from out of Newcastle in St. John, who revealed a little bit more of himself today. Do have a great afternoon.